I don't know. I don't trust him. I don't trust him anymore. During the entire campaign, Trump said, we're going to build this big, beautiful wall. It's not going to be a shabby little wall. It's going to be gigantic, big wall with big, beautiful doors on it. That sounds like he's on crack. Big, beautiful wall and big, beautiful doors. And when people scale the wall, they'll look down and say, how am I going to get down? Man, these are drugs, and there's got to be drugs involved here. Then Trump's, and that's not enough. Then Trump says, as you remember, it's on tape all over the place and all the speeches, and Mexico's going to pay for the wall. Turns out Mexico's not going to pay for the wall. We are. Now, that's not what you said, Don. He said, Mexico's paying for it. You can't come to me and ask me for the money. Trump says, well, we're going to do a new trade deal with Mexico, you see, which hasn't been solidified yet, by the way. And they're going to pay for the wall on a monthly basis on an installment plan. What do you think this is, a furniture store? You're buying a couch? What the hell's wrong with you, man?
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
I think they. You also get a gift card.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird. If you like that sort of thing.
An installment plan? What?
Whatever.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Oh, that's great.
Back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you very much, Julie. Welcome to the program. Relax, please. Sit back. I'll take it from here. I will take care of everything. I will pay for the wall, okay? Yeah, it's just $10 a month. 9% interest, free gift card. I don't know. Anyway, welcome to the program. It's 2018 is almost coming to a close. It's upon us. And this is the weekend when all the news outlets do the year in review. Let's go back in time for the past 12 months and review. Let's go look at all the crap we've been through. It's like going into therapy, sitting on the couch and having the therapist say, tell me all the bad stuff that happened and why you think it's your fault. I don't think it's my fault. I think it's his fault. And it is. Let me tell you something. I remember when I was growing up. That's the end of the sentence. I remember when I was growing up, I had two pillars of foundation under my feet. Those two pillars were my parents, depending on your situation, or parent, whatever. There was someone in a family who was taking care of you, where you really didn't have to feel like it was all on your shoulders. Somebody else is nurturing you, feeding you, concerned about you, protecting you, putting a roof over your head, whatever the case may be. That was your first pillar of foundation. You are being taken care of. You're still in the nest, and you're good. Not to say you didn't have problems. Maybe you were bullied in school. Maybe you were you were sexually assaulted, whatever. But there was a foundation there. Whether you used it or not, it was there. And believe me, having something, the value of it is not using it. It's just knowing that it's there if you needed it. That's what foundation is. Not the use of, the knowledge thereof. That's foundation number one. Foundation number two is the government. This great country of the United States. That was foundation number two. I believed, I don't even think I was told this, but I just believed naturally that the people in government know everything. There are experts in every single freaking field, in economics, in geography, in warfare, in domestic values. There are leaders and experts who work in government 24 hours a day, around the clock, every year. They never sleep. The best and the brightest and the most intelligent in the entire world, on the entire globe, work for the United States government, and we are protected by them every second of every day like a gigantic insurance policy. If anything goes wrong, they are there to fix it. The belief in the security and the knowledge and the integrity of the government. Foundation number two. Foundation number three was a branch of the government. And that was what they called back when I was growing up, a think tank. And I was led to believe that the finest minds in our culture, they meet and they discuss and they come up with the best and brightest as we have innovations, inventions. Why, we even landed on the moon. Who would have thought that was possible? Landing on that thing that hangs in the sky? Can't be done. They did it. That was the think tank. Those were the innovations that made my foundation so strong. I am living in a wonderful bubble of foundation. Then I got older and I found out that's not true. Here's the first thing you find out. Your parents weren't all that smart. That foundation had incredible cracks in them. My parents were apparently, unbeknownst to me, not perfect. What? Yeah, Ron, your parents weren't perfect. They were human. They made mistakes. Perhaps they weren't even good at parenting. Wow. You just swiped away my foundation. Swipe away number two, the government is not only not as smart as you thought, they are actually inefficient and frequently stupid because their values and their directions are not for the people, it's often for power and for money. I didn't know that. Yes, it's true. Foundation number two, the government protects you not all that well. And as being proven right now, extremely poorly. Foundation number three being swept away, this think tank thing, you get to know some of the people who are supposedly in the think tank, they have no brains. Wow. Now you swipe all those foundations away from a human being when they become an adult, they're kicked out of the nest, and then you realize, it's all on me. I have nobody to go to. It's me. It's me. Everything's on my shoulders. That is disconcerting for most human beings. Foundation swept away, you're left standing there on your own, by yourself, with virtually no support. Ron, are you painting a bad picture? A dismal picture? No, man. It's reality. Childhood, bubble of protection. adult, you're on your own, with nothing. It's you, babe. It's you. It always was. You just never realized it. Too much for a child to realize, so they don't tell you. It's like the Santa Claus thing. Too much to tell you, so I'm just going to leave you alone here and just let you hope. I'm going to let you hope. Wow. Is that what it's about? Yeah, it is. It is. It is about that. So, Happy New Year. If I could take Donald Trump, shove him in a room, lock the door, and just and he's stuck there with me, I would say, Don, shut your mouth and listen to me. You're the president of the United States. And believe me when I just said that, my balls fell off. But you are the president of the United States. You somehow got in. I think that even shocked you. I have one piece of advice for you. That's not only advice, it's a demand. You're the president. You represent everybody. You represent every living citizen on this land. That's your job. You represent everybody, not just 33% of them. Stop playing to your base and start satisfying your country. Well, that's what I thought I was doing, Ron. That's a horrible impression of Trump. I realize that. I can't do that. I can't do Trump very well. Other people do it so well, I don't even try. But there's no talking to Don. There's no talking to him at all. He's illiterate. He's self-absorbed, egotistical. His only goal here is when the presidency is over, he can build hotels in Moscow and other Middle Eastern countries. That's his only thing. Saudi Arabia, Moscow, hotels. A couple in China wouldn't be so bad. It's all for him. It's not for you. It's for him. It either serves his pocket and his wallet, or it serves his ego. That's all. If you want to get on the good side of Donald Trump, you stroke his ego. The day you actually say anything against Donald Trump, he will be out to destroy you like nobody else. And that's it. That's all he knows. That's all he is. You that voted him in, I get it. But what are you doing? What are you doing? It's like the devil takes on the shape of human beings, and then you warm up to the human being, you find out it's really the devil. That's what this is. Trump's legacy is the devil, I'm telling you, man. And it's all because of his self-loathing, I guess it could be. I don't know, I'm not a therapist. Anyway, on every show, I always say I'm not going to spend the show talking about Donald Trump. You may have, again, gotten the idea that I don't particularly care for the man. I don't know where you got that from. Anyway, it is the time to look back on 2018. And when you look back on anything, by the way, Donald never looks back, never apologizes. I remember this line so well. It was such a definition of Trump's character. When Trump said, I never apologize. Admitting you're wrong is a sign of weakness. How can anybody be married to you? Anyway, this is my country, Don. I'm staying. You get the hell out. How about that idea? Okay. Here's the other thing. I believe in other countries, they have votes of no confidence. In other words, you can be in office, and if your ratings, your approval rating is so low that like only a quarter of the country or only a third of the country supports you and the rest of them want you out, that then you have a vote of no confidence and you get kicked out. Why can't we have that? Why can't we have that? Does that not make all the sense in the world? Why can't we have that? This is supposed to be a democracy. Everything's for the people. Yet you can have a czar in office when only 33% of the people want him there or her? That should be a vote of no confidence. You have the vote, you kick the person out, you do another election. What's wrong with that? Why is that not democracy? I ask you. I ask you with a bit of a British accent. I ask you. I love British accents. Do you know why? It's because as soon as you do a British accent, you sound like you're civilized and you're literate and you know what you're talking about. It's just, it's an amazing thing. It's the opposite of a Southern accent. I know our show airs all over the country, so I really shouldn't be doing this, but it's true. The Southern accent is not the biggest sound of intelligence, and I think Southerners actually will admit that. Well, let me tell you something about that, because I've been studying this for a long time, and I really, truly believe in my heart, and so does my dog, I've been doing research on this till the cows came home. It doesn't sound like real definitive stuff. Yet, if you have a British accent, anything you say is totally knowledgeable. Yes, well, actually, I did get up yesterday, and I found that this was malarkey, poor malarkey. So I actually sat down and read a book. I had a little sniff of brandy, and I knew at that time that there was no question that the serfs and everybody else knew that there was no democracy involved in any type of decision. So I said to them, I said, this is malarkey. I will not put up with this any longer. That sounds very, very intelligent. Nothing was said, but it sounded intelligent. So I think for 2019, I've made a New Year's resolution. I'm only going to talk with a British accent. See where it gets me. Because I was taught by Donald Trump that if you fool people, you can get away with anything. So I'm going to try that. So starting January 1st or 2nd, I might be a little hungover on the 1st. On the 2nd, I will constantly use a British accent. And if someone says to me, Ron, you're not British, well, that's a phony accent. I'll say, yes, I'm studying for a theatrical production, and I'm trying to get into character. Oh, okay. All right. For the whole year? Yeah, for the whole year. You can get away with anything. Thank you, Don. Anyway, I don't think it's worth it to sit back and review the year. The only time it's worth reviewing something is if you can learn something as a result. Like, ooh, I shouldn't have done it that way. I'm going to try to never do it like that again. I drank way too much during the past year. I'm going to try to drink a little bit less. I ate way too much the past year. I'm going to try to eat a little bit less. I didn't exercise enough last year, and I put on some pounds. I'm trying to learn from that. If you do that, it's somewhat satisfying. It gives you hope. It gives you direction. It's not just like I'm drowning in a cesspool and there's no way out. When there's a new year, it's like someone's dropping you a ladder. You never really climb out of the cesspool, but you appreciate the effort of the ladder coming in for you. It's kind of that more than anything. Yes? No? You know what I got for Christmas? A 6-pack of underpants. Don't tell me nobody doesn't love me.
Listening to the Ron Van Dam Show is like realizing that you put your underwear on backwards this morning. It's wrong, but it doesn't feel bad, and it's not like anyone's ever gonna find out, so just go with it. This is the Ron Van Dam Show on New England Broadcasting.
This is the Ron Van Dam Show. We do this every single weekday, unless it's a holiday of some significance. I got a bunch of people behind me that do a lot of the writing and the stuff that goes on here and the technical things and the interview agents and all that kind of stuff. Man, thank you so much. Jason Shaw, that's background music that you're hearing, composed by Jason Shaw. Thank you. As he does a lot of the music, almost all of it, on this program. The lovely and talented John Shanahan. Great writer, comedian, does all these little bumps and comedy commercials on the program. Nicole Reed, she books some of the national talent interviews that you hear in the program, and she's the girl, the British girl, at the beginning of the program as well. And Julie Cochran, also in the opening there, and many other people behind the scenes. So thank you very much. That's in lieu of large payment. By the way, you may have noticed that listening to this show is absolutely free. Do you know why? It's because I'm making the Mexicans pay for it. My guest today is really significant, and I'm looking forward to this. I think you're going to enjoy this. Our healthcare system, our pharmacies, our doctors, apparently, it's not working out. And when you break it on down, as our guest has, you'll be shocked about just how corrupt most systems can be, all in the name of power and money, as we were talking about earlier. Another foundation being swept from beneath me. Listen to this interview. Let's hook them up. Dr. Joseph Jarvis joins us now. He's not only a doctor, but an author of a book called The Purple World. And we're talking about healthcare, American healthcare, and healing. What prompted you to write this book?
Well, I spent years and years trying to induce people in the United States to think about healthcare differently through the usual political processes.
Yes.
And decided that a bigger audience was needed and a book seemed like the right place to go.
Okay. It does seem like the right place to go, actually. Tell us about yourself. You've been an expert in this field for quite some time.
I graduated with a medical degree in the early 80s and then decided to go into public health.
Mm-hmm.
So I got public health training also at the same school of medicine in Utah where I got my MD. Mm-hmm. I practiced for a while as a family doctor.
Yep.
In generally areas where people didn't have insurance, in Salt Lake City and in Washington, D.C. and Reno, Nevada, before becoming the lead public health official for the state of Nevada for a few years.
Wonderful.
The last 25 years, I've been a consultant in public health and environmental health.
Well, there's no question that on the minds of Americans and through political surveys that healthcare is right at the top of concerns, cuts above all others, so this is a very timely situation. And the reason is because people are concerned about the rising costs in healthcare. Just every year, the percentages gets a little further away from what people can afford, and now we're in a situation politically where we don't even know where we're going to end up in healthcare tomorrow. The concern is big. Why does healthcare cost so much in this country, where in other countries not as much of a concern?
Healthcare costs a lot in the United States because we have both a poor quality system and because we have a highly inefficient financing mechanism.
Yeah.
Poor quality care costs more. This is the unusual thing, one of the unusual things about healthcare that people need to understand. High quality care costs less. If we would have a more efficient financing system and better quality care, we would save $1 trillion a year.
Wow.
And cost wouldn't be an issue.
Other countries do well with it. Some do, some don't. Why doesn't this country or the leaders of this country use other countries as models for our systems?
Because the political process in the United States is owned and operated by the medical industrial complex, which is making a great stack of money off of poor quality care and highly inefficient health financing.
Eesh. Well, that's not what I wanted to hear, to be honest with you. we've talked about the single-payer healthcare systems, and there's been debate as to whether that's a good route to go. What do you feel about that?
My preference is, yes, single-payer, but done on a state-by-state basis.
Huh.
This is not getting wide discussion in the current policy debate, but there already is a bill before Congress, H.R. 6097, called the State-Based Universal Health Care Act, which would allow states to do single-payer reform and provide each state, therefore, with a mechanism for fashioning policy ideal for its own setting and saving, in done together in all 50 states, saving the $1 trillion I just talked about.
Wow. In your book, you say that the difference between the Republican approach to health care and the Democrats' approach to health care isn't all that really different in the scheme of things.
No, that's true. Mitt Romney, when he was governor in Massachusetts, passed what essentially was Obamacare.
Yeah.
And then, of course, a few years later, Obama, with the leadership in the Democratic leadership in the House and Senate, passed the same bill for the nation. They do the same thing. Trump Care is just a meaner variation on the same thing.
Well, yeah, well, Trump Care is anything but somebody else's name care is pretty much all that is. That's pretty much. All right. In a system like ours, of course, the answer should be that the citizens, the people would say, no, this is what we want. But it never seems to work like that in this democracy where the people don't come up with the ideas and don't seem to rally towards something. Unfortunate, but healthcare would be a great example of that if that were the case.
Well, it's true. I think you're right. We kind of stumble through things as a nation and go veer left and right, do lots of things that don't make much sense. But as Winston Churchill says, Americans will always do the right thing after they've tried every other alternative.
Exactly. Good.
And I think we're getting closer now. I think the American public's finally beginning to focus and pay attention, and I think we actually will get this job done.
Yeah, it's like that chemical cleaner, Formula 409, I believe it is. It took 408 tries, apparently, before 409 became a good cleaner. I don't know.
There we go.
I don't know what number healthcare system we're on just yet, but maybe that's the case. The other side of what you're talking about is actually frightening, that the pharmaceutical companies and the medical clinics, et cetera, actually run the system.
Yes, that is frightening. They have their profits foremost. In fact, patient care really comes nowhere on their list of priorities. And, you know, the pharmaceutical industry is a great illustration of how dysfunctional this pretense of a market is. They can raise their prices infinitely, and that's literally what they've been doing, and still get people to pay them. Why? Because it's not a market. People are forced to buy insulin if they have diabetes, no matter what the price is.
Yeah.
In a market, of course, higher prices would mean limited demand for the product, and the product would disappear.
Yeah, I mean, that EpiPen fiasco was a very good example of that in a very bold manner.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right.
They are getting very bold, aren't they?
Yes, they are getting bold because they can get bold. And again, this country was based on revolution and the people rising up. And I don't know, I think we're just sitting on the couch too much. There's no more rising, I have no idea.
Our focus, as I said, our focus is beginning to coalesce around this. You're right. Cost is really driving people to it. But, you know, the other thing that's true is that it's incredibly risky to personal health to do healthcare business the way we do it. I think the most dangerous thing an American citizen does is allow him or herself to be admitted to the hospital.
I know.
There are 400,000 deaths per year in the United States due to preventable injury of hospitalized patients.
Yes.
That's like an airplane falling out of the sky every day if that safety record were transposed on the American airline industry.
I know.
This is going to catch our attention. Ultimately, we're not going to you know, we know that our family members are being affected by this.
Well, we know this. We actually did an interview recently about how many people actually pass away in the hospital because of medical mistakes, which are rampant but not discussed. But we don't have alternatives is the problem. I mean, what do you do as an alternative of going to a hospital when you're in a trauma situation?
Well, you don't have the alternative, and that's going to drive us ultimately. And this is one of the things I wrote the book to do, tell stories to engage Americans about this problem in a new way so they'll get a little bit more motivated and focused and vote for people who actually pay attention to this problem from the patient's perspective.
Yeah. Dr. Jarvis, everything you say has the ring of truth to it, and I'm glad that you were able to compound this into a book that's available to people. It is available. It's called The Purple World. It's available everywhere. Is there a website that we can follow to keep on top of this?
Yes, thepurpleworld.com, where you'll find a link to purchase the book, but also I post there daily and try to keep people apprised of what's current.
Excellent. The Purple World, Healing the Harm in American Healthcare. Great conversation. Thank you so much. Hopefully we can talk again.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That was chilling. If I went to a movie and sat through a two-hour horror film with screaming, blood, and murder, I think it wouldn't be as disconcerting as what I just learned from this past interview. Oh, God. Oh, my God. All right. I'm out of time for today. I'm going to be back again the next time a weekday rolls around, which would be Monday, by the way. So we'll talk about New Year's Eve. Tori Lagarde will be joining me for some conversations. It's just going to be a fest of fun. So join me then, will you? Until then. Until then. Come on. I wish you peace. That's what I wanted to say. Sure I do. I wish you the best. I really do. I really do. I'm just playing to my own audience. I wish you the best, because you're special. You're very special. Without you, well, nothing would change, actually, but still, you're very special. I hope everything you want comes to you quickly.